Hey everyone, welcome to The Grind Volume 3. I am Burnside, and it is unofficially Propaganda today. Following The Grind, we are going to be airing the sixth installment of the G7 Welcoming Committee podcasts for your listening enjoyment. But right now on The Grind, I am bringing you an interview with Jord, the drummer from Propaganda. They were on a little five-day prairie burner tour through Edmonton, Calgary, Saskatoon, Regina, and I believe they were wrapping it up in Winnipeg. Originally, I was supposed to be bringing you an interview with Buck Cherry as well. Sat down with Josh Todd and Keith Nelson when they played The Cooler here in Lloydminster back in the middle of February. They talked about everything from Kelly Clarkson to playing at Woodstock 99. I also asked Josh about his original startup band. It was a punk band called Slamhound, and talked about some of his influences growing up in the industry that way, and what he likes now in the form of punk music. But the weekend that I went to interview Propaganda was a pretty bad weekend in terms of data loss. We had an event where a friend of mine ended up deleting the pictures and some video that he had taken during the Propaganda show before I went in to do the interview with Jord. And felt kind of bad for him, but then I realized that I had also recorded over my Buck Cherry interview and apparently deleted it off my editing computer at work too. Pretty bonehead move, but it's Buck Cherry. It's not like I deleted the Propaganda interview, so didn't lose too much sleep. Anyways, when I was talking to Josh from Buck Cherry, he was talking about Minor Threat being a huge influence. One of the songs that he brought up was Small Man, Big Mouth, and I'm going to play that for you. Minor Threat, great straight-edge hardcore band. So I'm going to toss that on for you, and then we'll get right into the interview with Jord.
Someone else. Stop consuming animals.
You guys just finished playing your set here in Saskatoon. Mm-hmm. This is your second last date on your Cross Prairie tour. How's it going so far?
really smooth. Yeah, it's nice to see crowds mellow a little bit over time and not get too terribly stupid and violent at the shows. And I don't know, at least from where I'm seeing things, it's been positive. Good crowds, nice people, no problems.
It's always good to come back to the Prairie Towns and the people that have supported you.
Yeah, for sure. And it was great. In Edmonton and in Regina, we had some people from Grassy Narrows come by, and unfortunately, they're on their way to Seattle to, I guess, raise some awareness about some of the companies that are involved in sort of clear-cutting their First Nation reserve. And, it was nice to sort of have that kind of angle on things to, you know, expose that to, I guess, our audience who don't really hear about that kind of stuff. It doesn't really get a whole lot of press, but... Yeah, that was definitely a bonus. And I mean, tonight was, I think, one of the more hilarious band moments we've ever had when Todd's dad came on stage in the McDonald's shitty McShake outfit. Was that
preconceived?
Yeah. We've had that for about a year now, kind of milk that costume out a little bit. Just trying to make a point about how absurd the level of commercialization and co-optation of punk rock and everything else in the world has become. And so, yeah.
You hinted towards the Warped Tour tonight with the all the corporate sponsorship. What do you think of the state of punk, if you will, and where it's going?
I might not be the best person to ask that question because after doing G7 Welcoming Committee and helping sort of work with that label for a number of years, I got to a point where the state of music depressed me so much that I basically shut everything completely off for about 5 or 6 years now, and I just can't even bring myself to fucking check anything out. And I know there's cool stuff out there, and I've heard some people playing some tunes that I fucking that I dig and that I'm into and stuff like that, but I just kind of got to a point where it's back when we were into making our band and like being inspired by all these bands like MDC and Corrosion of Conformity and stuff like that years and years ago, Government Issue, all these different kinds of bands. There wasn't the big corporate carrot shit stick being dangled in front of everybody. The music scene seemed more diverse and a little more original.
Yeah.
And ever since like Nirvana, Green Day and that kind of stuff and that whole wave and phenomenon has sort of happened to punk like other forms of music in the past and what's happened to hip hop and everything, it's just like
it's really getting watered down.
Yeah, and everybody's sort of I think the motivation has changed for a lot of people. It's like people want to be rock stars. They want to, I was watching this thing on VH1 on Vans Warped Tour last year, and just seeing Sum 41 or Blink 182 or one of those bands just basically saying, if it wasn't for Vans Warped Tour, we wouldn't be here today because that was the first show that we went to and it inspired us and all that kind of stuff. And it's just like, well, in a nutshell, that's kind of,
sums it up well.
Yeah, but there is obviously a punk underground. I think I know that there's cool stuff going on. I just
have to dig for it.
Yeah, you have to dig for it for sure.
Just talking about there's a lot of bands that are reuniting right now. Rage Against the Machine, The Police, Bad Brains. What are your thoughts on the older bands that are coming back? Do you think it's for that financial benefit?
Sure it is, and I'm sure a lot of bands are like tempted. Like I went and saw Celtic Frost in Winnipeg a few months ago, and that was a band that fucking blew me away when I was a kid getting into like thrash music and stuff like that, and I had to go and I thought they were really good and stuff like that. But I imagine like a lot of bands are just tempted, like, go out, try to, and that's a moderate amount of money that the guys like that are probably, but it makes like, I don't know what kind of jobs those guys are sort of, probably working, and they're seeing, oh, we can get over to North America, do this tour, might as well. I don't know. I have mixed feelings on it. I'm not going to go see The Police, though.
I just bought my tickets the other day. We'll see about that, how it goes. Yeah, for the Edmonton date.
Oh, they're playing Edmonton?
They are. They added some more dates get us more fans and get some more money out of it, I guess. You have a new DVD coming out the 24th of April, and you had mentioned the Grassy Narrows organization. Do some of the proceeds from the sale of the DVD go towards Grassy Narrows?
Yeah, and actually, as far as I understand, I think a large part of the proceeds will be going directed towards that. And it's kind of like a thing in Manitoba that's it's somewhat regional, and there's a lot of community support that goes out from Winnipeg to Grassy Narrows. And we know a lot of people that are sort of intimately involved with the whole thing, so it's something very, very easy for us to support. And I think it's the kind of thing like the sort of struggle that represents like what people can do sort of legitimately through like approaching, the legal means of manufacturing some sort of change for the better. And they've tried all the options patiently for decades, and they're just being fucked over consistently. So, I mean,
It's not as easy to change the system from within the system as
And I encourage people to you know, get in their MPs' faces and write letters and all that stuff. I don't think that stuff is a waste of time. But I think that also, like, things like blockades and you know, just solidarity with the Native movement everywhere in the world is critical, because I think that in a lot of Indigenous cultures, they have, I think, a lot of solutions to the problems that we've created. And, I mean, just the colonial genocidal legacy we live under, we owe these people a tremendous amount of respect and support. So it's definitely something that's sort of a core belief of ours, I think.
Playing here in Saskatoon, you play The Bringer of Greater Things, which deals with an issue that happened here a few years back. Care to talk about that?
Well, I mean, the situation here in Saskatoon, I think, is something that's not an isolated incident. I think this kind of, you know, sort of racial profiling, if you want to call it that, is something that's systematic and just kind of, you know, I think at a sort of fundamental basis of what societies like ours sort of, how they deal with those the problems from their perspective, yeah. You know, and certainly in Winnipeg, it's a city with a very, very large urban population of Indigenous folks, and people are coming in from the reserve all the time looking for a better lifestyle in the city, and then they get there and it's just kind of like an urban hell. And I mean, like, we have to progress somehow. It's just kind of, it's difficult, I think, trying to figure out the means to the end and all that kind of stuff. But it's just like, you know, I think every avenue has to be sort of, you know, gone down, every path overturned to try to, you know, create some sort of equitable system and a system of self-governance that's true self-governance without interference from the Canadian state. And I don't know, I support that wholeheartedly. And you know, I'm sure if you ever visit Winnipeg and go walking down North Main, you'll sort of see what I'm talking about in terms of just like urban poverty, child poverty, all that kind of stuff, and all the negative manifestations of that.
Do you think as a population that we'll ever eradicate racism and just hatred towards different people, or is it just going to be something that continually shifts to a different group depending on what's going on in the world?
Yeah, well, there's certainly, I think strategic reasons for, say, shifting blame on others all the time as the cause of a lot of problems, whether it's, you know, Native folks or immigrants from other countries taking our jobs and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know if you can really answer that, but you think of things like the women's suffrage movement and how those barriers have been, yeah, you know, eliminated somewhat. There's still definitely, like,
there's still holds on a lot of the ideas coming out of that movement.
For sure, but I mean, like, a lot of that stuff has happened within the last, you know, century or so, mm-hmm. or, you know, but, and struggles definitely take time. But, you know, I think that it's just an ideal that you work towards, and you don't really, you know, I think, get too caught up in thinking that things are hopeless. Just try to achieve those ideals by whatever means you can, mm-hmm. as an individual, or hopefully more in organized groups.
When you play your shows, you bring a lot of reading material for the concert goer to, if they choose to take in. How important do you think that is as a band to bring that to the masses?
To me, it's one of the more important things that we do. You know, I think information and like good quality sort of info is kind of a key to getting that basic root understanding of things, and from that people can become active and get engaged in their own communities to fight whatever's inspiring them.
An amalgamation of Jewish scripture and Christian thought. What will that get you? Not a fuck of a lot. Take a look at your promised land. Your deed is that gun in your hand. Mount Zion's a minefield, the West Bank. The Gaza Strip, the West Bank.
With songs like Hellier Does Hebron, do you guys get a lot of negative feedback from the ideals that you present in your songs from Jewish people, right-wing nationalists, pro-homophobic or pro-mass consumerist groups? Is there a lot of response?
I wouldn't say too much from, like if you're saying something like Vans Warped Tour, if we're bagging on that, it seems like there's, I don't know, we're kind of isolated in Winnipeg. We're not really part of, like, the punk rock community or anything like mm-hmm. that. Like, we're pretty, you know, way out there. Mostly we get correspondence that indicates like support for, you know, what we're trying to get across to people. Occasionally there are people who are, you know, yeah. extremely hateful towards, you know, certain ideals that we have and stuff, but I mean, you know, it's really hard to gauge, you know, but it's kind of in the minority. Mm-hmm. I think they're probably directing their energies and into other things and don't really know that we exist.
Ignorance is bliss, hey? What's your opinion on mass media outputs, like Canadian Idol or American Idol or Rockstar, where it is very clearly something that is produced for the masses for the purpose of raising finances?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really pay too much attention to that stuff. I think it's very, very strange and bizarre ways of, like, entertaining and distracting people, and it's kind of weird to just see how these different things come about over time and how immensely popular they are. It really makes you think of, like, I don't know, 1984 yeah. in a lot of ways.
Very Orwellian.
Yeah.
What do you feel is more rewarding for you right now, performing as Propagandhi or devoting time towards your record collective, G7?
I haven't been actively involved with G7 for a number of years now, but I think the kind of band that we have with the political intent that we have, doing stuff like the Book Table, being on a label like G7 and getting off of labels like Fat Records is, I don't know, it keeps me interested because I feel like there's some degree of integrity involved, and outside of the band, just being involved with community activist projects in Winnipeg, and specifically right now I'm sort of helping with a group in Winnipeg called the Canada Haiti Action Network that's on the net. You can Google that easily, and it's in a number of cities across Canada. And basically we just try to expose Canada's role in Haiti. There was a coup d'etat down there a few years ago where their elected president was sort of sent packing after they started introducing things like wage increases for the poor of the most poorest country in the entire hemisphere. And Canada gets on board with the United States and France and gets rid of the guy, and nobody really knows about it, and it's just very covert. A lot of Canadian big money interests going on down there. So I just, you know, get involved with something like that. I feel less isolated than just kind of sitting in my house and just being so angry at things and yeah. you know, sort of stifled, and you know, like you're, but and I don't know, that activist work is huge. It's very, very challenging too, to try to keep things moving along positively, but I think it helps me balance like what I believe in band wise and the other sort of part of my life outside of, you know, watching hockey here and there and that kind of stuff. And it's like, without those two things, I don't know what I'd be doing, actually.
The opinions expressed in the following message are those of the Shell Petroleum Company and in no way misrepresent the business interests of the corporate-owned media in which it originally appeared.
In your opinion, what are the top five multinational corporations who pose the most danger to the human race at this time?
Well, Halliburton would have to probably be one. Boeing, Coca-Cola is another huge fucker. I have a personal gripe against Coke because they fucking took over our water tower in the town that I grew up in and basically painted it.
In Portage, they did that?
Portage, and it's just the biggest fucking embarrassment ever.
Jeez.
What are two others that I have extreme hate on for? I think Microsoft, just in terms of their ability to appear to be progressive as their foundation basically is involved in things like investing in oil companies in Nigeria and at the same time helping the people of Nigeria. It's just really...
A little bit of a double standard there.
Yeah, like very convoluted and very confusing, and I think giving people a lot of hope that, you know, through corporations we can help change things, and Shell, and they're all fucked. They're all the same.
We saw sort of a similar thing, not us personally, but in history with IBM and the Holocaust.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Coke was in there too, yeah. And fucking Bush the senior.
Our city seems to function quite the same. Swimming ghettos under one big rug makes them easy to contain. So the upper middle class can sleep. Convince themselves that trickle down will solve this poverty. Murderers walk our streets. The weapons of their pens, death policies. We are campaigns that by the spoils of war. Against the lazy shift this population out of war. This system cannot be reformed.
Certainly for environmental reasons, like we have to fucking shift things now.
Very, 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 very soon.
Very soon. And it's like there's this author who wrote this book called Heat, George Monbiot from England, and he basically stresses that point. We have to force the government. We can't vote people in and expect them to make the changes for the benefit of everybody. We have to force it to happen, hold these people accountable. Now, how that is going to happen remains to be seen, but it's clearly the goal is set, and it seems very apparent that, you know, shit has to radically change. And if the government is going to be the tool to achieve those things, then we have to basically put in a whole new group of these folks, you know, across the board.
Yeah.
United States, Canada, Western Europe, the entire world, you know. But I think it's what the average person really wants. And I think that's what keeps me hopeful. I think most people have kind of like a moral understanding. Like, nobody wants the world to fucking end.
No.
They want their kids to grow up in a fucking clean environment where they have things like fucking free health care and, you know, everybody's looked after. It's, you know, time for, I think, a shift in consciousness and an evolution to a new reformation or whatever, you know, just a new understanding that kind of doesn't get led astray by the people who are experienced in controlling the levers of power. So
we've tried that before and it clearly isn't getting us anywhere.
Yeah. Seems like the odds that we're stacked up against makes it seem hopeless because they hold the power, they hold all the money and the military and the means of force and everything, but we have all the human resources. We outnumber these motherfuckers extremely.
It's just a matter of polarizing the population here to get them into movement.
Yeah, exactly.
Slightly insane on the 18 North Main, reach for a small town downtown night rain. Nothing I can say could be worth saying anyway today. Like, hey, whatever happened to what's that guy's name?
Slightly lighter topic now. John K. Sampson played with you folks before. His group, The Weaker Thans, have signed to Epitaph. What is your take on that?
You know what I more or less think of. You know, I'd fit Epitaph and Fat and all these huge indies from, Southern California predominantly into the same shitty nutshell. But I mean, that was one of the things with G7 that was extremely frustrating, was knowing that as a label, it almost felt like you could never get over this hump of being like a small indie to the, like, imagine if you had the resources of Epitaph or Fat Records, the kinds of things you could pull
the
off.
Distribution and just the numbers of
yeah, and the thing, the projects that you could support, and just the more information you could get out and that kind of stuff. So when you're G7 and you have a band come up that's like, you know, doing really well, and you kind of you're sort of, you need those bands to sell records to mm-hmm. do what you're doing with the other bands that, you know, will never sell a lot of records, like the spoken word stuff that we were doing, that kind of stuff, that it's like, you know, that's, you know, the shit that I really wanted to, you know, push and sell. Yeah. But no, you know,
ironically, you can't get that out there.
Yeah,
easily.
Yeah. And then when there's these other big labels that are just kind of like farming the small labels, and it's just like, that these guys sold this many units over this amount of time, let's fucking make them an offer that they can't refuse.
They're farm
and
teams now.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very rigidly tiered kind of system. And it's very, very difficult to operate a label. But I can't bag on those guys for their decision, you know. That's what they do. Well, no, I can. I do all the time, just not publicly. Yeah. But you know, whatever. That's those guys. Fuck.
Have you, as Propagandy, have you as a band, needed to make a lot of compromise, say within the band or within the industry or within the label, just to get the message that you want to get out to the masses?
Well, I mean, there's certain fundamental compromises you make when you're renting a fucking van and you know, buying fucking gas to get here and all that kind of shit. It's like,
has there been a compromise that you really, it just stopped you in your shoes and you had to really, really double think about what you were doing?
Well, at that sort of level, I can't really say that, you know, the folks at Fat Records never, ever pushed us in a direction that was like, you guys should do this kind of stuff or whatever. Like, anything that we're saying on stage is just like more, I think, indicating the state of punk rock music and, you know, commercial involvement and all that kind of stuff. But actually, they, you know, they didn't really present us, they kind of know what we're about and all that kind of stuff, and we've never been put in a situation where we've had to, you know, compromise on terms of like any sort of sellout basis to any group or company like that. It's just like, you know the stuff that we've tended to endorse has been things like AK Press and ZNet and these kind of things, and anything that we, you know, stick on our website or our liner notes, that's what we, you know, support and endorse, and we haven't really been involved in any sort of like compromise on that level. Mm-hmm. Just on maybe like the sort of more like day-to-day logistical, you know, economical kind of things.
Say in the future there was a Propagandy tribute album, who would you be all right with seeing on that album?
Oh man, that's, I don't know, I never thought about that before.
it will be coming at some point. I have to say, I mean, I think you as a band have established a certain level that you know, like, there are going to be people out there that want to have something put out. Would that ever be something that you think you would want to be involved with?
I can't say yes to that question, although I would be intrigued if hearing covers of some of our stuff. I think that'd be hilarious.
Would there be anybody that you would not want to associate with your name?
I don't know. I don't know if I can answer that. That's a tough one.
Pretty loaded question, I guess. Anything you care to say about your new DVD in terms of content? I have seen that it's not solely performance, and there's a lot of there's at least two documentaries, is that correct, on there?
Yeah, I think so. It's gonna be I mean, that's probably more the reason for actually putting something like that out, is, you know, if anybody wants to see, you know, band antics or anything like that,
come to the shows.
Yeah, or, you know, if there's some stuff like that on the DVD, well, it's more or less, you know, trying to open a door for people to check out the info side of it. But yeah, I haven't been too active in producing the DVD. I can't stand seeing any live footage of us at all, so I hope that I'm just buried in the back and I'll be fine with it.
I guess that's pretty much it. I'll let you get to whatever you need to do.
Have a good one.
Well, that wraps up Volume 3 of The Grind with Burnside. Stay tuned in the very near future to punkradiocast.com for more interviews from me. I will be bringing you, hopefully, Bedouin Sound Clash and the Cranston Foundation, a great band from Calgary. And also, in May, I'll be heading to Europe to catch up with the guys from This Is a Standoff. That's the brand new band from Steve Rawls and Graham Churchill from Belvedere. Make sure you stay tuned because it's going to be some wicked listening. Yeah, that's about it. If you want to hit up the MySpace page, that's MySpace/Burnside780. And drop me a line. I'll see you guys later.